Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome. It's Joanna, and I've so been looking forward to our call today. So happy to be here with all of you. Today's call is a really juicy one, I think. It's the second part of coaching energetics. So I'm sure you remember our very, very, very first training call was about the energetics of coaching and the coaching relationship and the container. And of course, you know, on almost every single one of our calls, we've touched on energetics. Today's is sort of really part two, focused in on the energetics. And we're going to get into some advanced but very necessary territory here. A lot of what I'm going to share, similar to many other things that I share, is going to sound so simple and so obvious and like a duh, and it is, but at the same time, the things that we're going to be looking at today, even though many coaches know about these things, they haven't really integrated it in. They're not consciously approaching their container, their coaching containers and their clients and their client relationships in this way. It's truly one of the most important things that we can look at together. So first I just want to reiterate a few things about the coaching relationship. Whether it's for a 10-minute laser session or it's an ongoing client that you've worked with for years and years and years, the relationship between you and your coachee, the relationship between you and your client is bar none. It's the basis of everything. It is the most foundational piece in all the work that you'll do together. When the relationship is out of alignment and the energetics aren't tended to, that's when you're more likely to get the leaky container, frustration, disengagement, worry, and stuckness. When the relationship is aligned and the energetics of the relationship are tended to, that's what creates trust, vulnerability, excitement, motivation, accountability, depth. And those are really the pieces that are needed to put all of the content that you talk about in your sessions on top of. What happens in the coaching container is a microcosm of what happens out of the coaching container in the real world. I'm going to repeat that statement again. I want you to really take it in. What happens in the coaching container is a microcosm of what happens out of the coaching container in the real world. So what does this mean? It means if your client is unsure of herself when she is speaking to you, if she questions herself, if she doubts herself, if she looks to you to give her the answers, then you can pretty much bet that outside of the coaching container, she's doing the same thing in many of her relationships and just in her relationship even with the world. Or if your client happens to get angry at you easily, get frustrated with you or with the work easily, you can pretty much bet that that's just a microcosm of what happens out in the real world. She tends to anger easily at others or situations or get frustrated really easily. She has a low tolerance for that. If your client tends to compare herself with you, or if she's in a group with you, she tends to compare herself with other people in that group, you can pretty much bet that in the outside world, she's comparing herself a lot to others. If she has an unrealistic expectation of you, that even though you've kind of spoken about, she still has these unrealistic expectations, chances are, outside of that coaching container, she's got unrealistic expectations. If she's hard on herself in the relationship with you, in the container, then chances are she's hard on herself out of the container. So again, what happens in the coaching container is a microcosm of what happens out of the coaching container. So why is this important? Why am I really kind of emphasizing this and making note of this? Because if you as the coach don't take the lead with this, if you kind of just let things unfold in a way or just don't address these pieces, then there's a good chance that at some point in the coaching relationship, your coachee is going to get really stuck in her work with you because she's unconsciously bringing her own family dynamics and patterns into the relationship with you. So no matter what, your client is going to bring those family dynamics and patterns into the relationship with you. That's just going to happen because it happens at first until you work with it. But the more conscious that your client can be of these dynamics and patterns with your support, in other words, the more conscious you can first be of them, then the more the both of you can use all of these family dynamics and patterns that she's projecting onto you for her own growth and transformation, instead of those dynamics and patterns really working against you in the container. So, in other words, one of the most important components of the energetics that you as the coach want to be aware of is if your client is projecting mother or father or sister onto you. There might be some other things, you know, besides mother, father, sister, those are usually the big ones. Mother, father, sister, projecting those onto you. Again, there's nothing has gone wrong if this happens, so long as you know how to handle it. Doesn't mean that you've done anything wrong as a coach. If it happens, it's natural. We do these in relationships, and especially if it's a safe space and a safe relationship, and oftentimes if it's more of a longer-term relationship, this is more likely to happen. And it's because of a sense of comfort. When a client becomes comfortable with you, which is a good thing, when they feel that you're safe, when they, you know, allow the vulnerability, that's when they'll fall back unconsciously into some of those, the old family patterning. And I'm sure, you know, as you're listening, you realize that the coaching container isn't the only place this happens, right? Another big place where family dynamics and patterns are projected are in romantic relationships, right? Because again, there's that sense of comfort, there's that sense of safety. So if it happens, it's fine. But it's what you as the coach does about it that's important. If you don't address it, then it has the potential to eat away at the relationship and undermine your client's progress. If you as the coach can leverage it, it becomes like pure gold for your client. It ends up not only helping them work towards the goals that they've hired you for, but it helps transform so many other aspects and relationships in their lives. So let me get a little bit more specific here and give you some examples of how projections can show up in the coaching container. So maybe, and by the way, none of these things are things that your client are necessarily going to say, because it's so unconscious that she almost doesn't realize it. It's like she's bringing it, but very rarely will she actually say it to you. So you'll get what I mean as I give you some of these examples. So the reason why I say very rarely will it be said is because as a coach, you want to look for these energies. You want to look deeply, listen, not, you know, with your ears, with your heart, with your psyche, for the subtle clues that some of these projections are at play. So, for example, a client might bring the "you're going to judge me" projection to the container. Maybe this client has always been judged by a parent or a sibling or a person of authority, and they, because of it, they don't fully reveal themselves. They tell partial truths. They don't trust themselves to share truth about themselves. Or maybe they share, but then they brace themselves for a judgment, right? "You're going to judge me." Another example of a projection is "you don't love me," right? "If I do this, you're not going to love me." Or "there's something just intrinsically wrong with me and you don't love me," right? Again, from a family pattern. Or the other variation of this one is "you don't love me as much as you love her," right? Often this can happen with siblings when one sibling feels like a parent loves the other one more. It can happen sometimes in groups that you lead, or just even if your client is aware that you have other clients, there might be a fear inside, "you don't love me as much as you love your other clients." Another common projection, let's say that you're strategizing with your client and you're co-strategizing. You're coming up with a strategy together. It's something that your client, you know, there's a goal that your client wants, and based on his or her strengths, you're, you've come up with action steps. And then all of a sudden, either the client says this or you get this feeling that the client feels like you're making him do this. Like, this is, he has no free will here. And it's like you are that mean, authoritarian parent that's making him do something almost against his will. Sometimes there's this feeling from the client of, "if I don't get this right, then you'll punish me. I didn't take my action steps, I'm going to be punished. Or I didn't do that exactly the way that I should have, I'm going to be punished. Or you don't approve of me, you don't think I'm awesome enough." Here's another common one. And again, this is very rarely actually spoken. You have to listen for subtle clues and energy. But a big one that oftentimes is brought is, "you'll betray me." you won't really be there for me when I need you. And unfortunately, this one comes not only from family and early patterns and dynamics, but a little bit now from the coaching and transformational industries. There are enough people at this point that have kind of been burnt by coaches that haven't either been trained enough or haven't been aware of their own triggers or just haven't paid enough attention or you know, delivered what they said they would. So then that gets projected in, they hire you and it gets projected into that container. You won't really be there for me or you'll betray me. Another common one, and this is one that can sometimes, even for like the most smarty pants practitioners, can be hard to pick up on because it plays into our egos and our projections do a dance with their projections, is the when a client brings, you need to save me into the container. Like, I am a mess, and I don't know what I'm doing, and I am helpless, and I need to be saved. Or sometimes it's the opposite. Maybe they've been a caretaker their whole life. Their parent, they've taken care of their parents, even as little kids. They've had to, like, really watch out, keep the peace, make sure everybody's okay. They might be bringing, so then the client might be bringing in, I need to save you, my coach. Like, I need to take care of you, coach, right? I hope I don't hurt your feelings, blah, 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 like all that stuff. They might be bringing that dynamic in. Similar to the you're making me do this is you're trying to control me. It's a little different. There's a little bit of a different quality to it, right? But if it's someone who's often very controlled, they might be bringing that fear and projection in. You're trying to control me. Even when you as the coach aren't doing anything controlling at all, right, at all, but there's this energy that you're feeling. That's how the client is feeling. Maybe the client is bringing a fear of anger, right? You'll get angry at me. Maybe as a young person, they, you know, there was someone in their life that constantly was getting angry at them. So there's a fear, and then that plays out in your container and in your relationship. You don't really understand me. This is one that I've certainly, as a client, brought into containers. I never felt fully understood because I was never really fully seen or heard by my parents, and because of that, and I still have to check myself all the time when, like, I hire any kind of practitioner. Like, I go into it thinking, like, yeah, they're going to get me on a surface level, but they're not really going to get me, right? So is a client bringing it, and you don't really understand me? Or you don't really believe in me? Maybe they had someone in their life that just never really believed fully in them, right? And it's so important that our clients know that we believe in them. If there's any doubt in their mind that their coach doesn't believe in them, that's going to erode at the relationship. I mean, each of these things, hopefully you can see it. If there's any part of them that feels you're going to judge them, if there's any part of them that feels you don't approve of them, if there's any part of them that feels you're making me do this, right? All of this is going to erode the relationship, and it's going to stall them from moving forward towards their goals. Another variation of you don't really believe in me, you don't think I'm good enough, or here's a big one, you're not paying enough attention to me. Right? Maybe this is like a client that you pay so much attention to. They send many emails in between sessions, right? But there's this feeling of, oh, I'm not getting attention here. You're not paying enough attention. Or you're better than me. If they are feeling an unequal playing field, right? If they always felt that their sister was better than them or this one or that one, they might be bringing that in. Here's another one that I've seen come up a bit. You're going to think I'm too much. This is for people that, as children were told by their parents that they're too much, then they worry that their practitioner is going to feel like they're too much to handle. Or, you don't really like me. So there are definitely others, but those are some of the biggies. So let's pause here for a moment and take this all deeper and integrate all this in a bit more. We'll do some journaling. The first journaling question, what are some of the negative dynamics or patterns that you have or have had in the past with your mother or with a primary female caretaker? Maybe you recognize some, you know, from the ones that I mentioned. What are some of the negative dynamics that you've had with your own mother, if you've had one, or a primary female caretaker? Take a moment and jot that, some of those down. And if you're feeling like, I don't think I had any negative patterns or dynamics with my mom, she's great, I love her so much, I've loved her so much, I promise you there is. She could have been an amazing, amazing mother. It doesn't make her any less amazing. But we're human beings. There's something in there. I mean, I know for as conscious as I am, even with my own kids, they're going to have some of these pieces for sure. All right, next question. Same question, but with your own father or if you had a primary male caretaker. What are some of the negative dynamics or patterns that you've had with your own father if you've had one, or a primary male caretaker if you've had one? Another moment with that. Next question. What are some of the negative dynamics or patterns that you've had with your own sisters or brothers, if you've had siblings, or if not, any stand-ins for them, close friends or cousins or schoolmates? What are some of the negative dynamics or patterns that have shown up there? Some of that, you know, the sister, brother, or stand-ins for them are oftentimes around, like, she's better than me, he's getting more love than me, they'll betray me. Let's take another moment with that. And then when you've been a client, so not coach, but as a coachee, as a client, how have you brought family dynamics, patterns, or projections into the relationship? It can be with coaches or really any kind of practitioner, doctor, trainer, whatever it is. When you've been the client, how have you brought family dynamics, patterns, or projections into the relationship? Maybe without even realizing it until now. All right, so let's pause here. I'd love to hear what you're seeing so far. We're a little bit of a smaller group today, so feel free to raise your hand. What are you seeing so far about your own projections and dynamics? Star two. And like I said, we're a small group today, so please raise your hand. Here we go. Sophie.
Oh, hi, Joanna.
Hi.
So this is one of my favorite classes ever, and I'm realizing that actually the way I interact with almost everybody is the same as the way I interact with my father, so it's just one person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and do you want to share a little bit about what you're seeing about how you interact? Like, what's similar? What are the projections that are happening?
It's just one, quite a few of the projections, but the way I interact with coaches is So I've had some good, very, very, very good experiences and some not good, great ones. And I'm realizing that with even the good coaches that are doing a really great job, I feel like I'm never doing enough. And I feel like I'm going to be punished if I can't get it right soon enough.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's kind of why I feel a lot of pressure, and I'm not really sure it's coming from them.
It probably isn't, right? Like, probably 9 times out of 10, it's not, because now you can see you're bringing this dynamic in. And how is this feeling of pressure, like the coach is going to get upset, you know, if you don't get it right, how is that actually slowing you down towards your goals? What's happening because of this pressure that you're projecting?
Yeah, I really have noticed it's slowing me down, because instead of just doing something that they ask me to do, it takes me much longer to do it, because I feel so scared that it's kind of like I'll start and stop and start and stop. So
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It brings so much friction.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm going to take a guess here and tell me if I'm getting this right. I'm guessing that if that's happening in the coaching container, that's happening like in many other places in your life, that you're getting slowed down and moving towards the things that you want because you're stopping and starting and stopping and starting because you're scared that you're not gonna get it right.
Yeah, it's the fear of not getting it right. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Good. Okay, thank you for sharing that. Such a great illustration of exactly what I'm talking about. Beautiful. Thank you. See, Linda.
Hi. So for looking at it from the perspective of me being in a coaching situation, being coached by someone else, you're not paying enough attention to me is one of those things that, you know, will keep cropping up. And that totally is with regards to my mom and, you know, her being a widow at 31 and me kind of having to raise my brother and sister and her being off in her world, trying to cope with that particular situation. But it really was that thing of I was kind of left to my own devices because I was, you know, a smart, responsible kid. And so, you know, she didn't have to necessarily worry about me. But I didn't go to that extreme because there are some people who, you know, if you're not paying enough attention to me, then I'm going to do something really bad to get your attention.
Right.
I didn't go that.
You're too much of a
good
girl for that.
Right. So that's kind of how I, you know, that comes up for me in when I'm in a coaching situation from someone else.
And how is it? How do you see it like impacting that coaching relationship as well as the goals that you've set for yourself in that coaching container?
Oh, you know, it's what my tendency then is to just, you know, it's kind of pouting a little bit, but it's more just, you know, pulling back my energy of being invested in the situation. And of course that doesn't, you know, benefit me at all because I'm not being fully present to, you know, to show up and you know, and of course the irony of it all is that if you, you know, show up fully and you contribute, people do pay attention to you. So that, you know, that's something that, like I said, I have early on, I, you know, if I didn't feel I was getting paid attention to enough, then I just kind of like, yeah, I'm done with this person. You know, I'm still here, so obviously I've worked through some of that stuff.
It feels like you've done a lot of work on it, and I get this sense that there's another layer in this that you're ready to chip at. Do you have a sense of what that is?
Well, you know, what's interesting is the first thing going through that list, the one thing that I starred, as you were saying them, was the you don't really believe in me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that was really, that is the deeper layer because, I look at my kids and I may not pay attention to them from time to time. They're grown adults now, but when they were growing up. But when it came to things that, you know, were important to them and you know, I totally believed in their ability to, you know, either attempt it or, you know, try it or move forward with it. And that was, again, nothing that wasn't available to me in my, you know, parenting situation for myself as a child. And so what I really resonated with is that's one of the core things that all of my clients say to me, how much they appreciate how I believe in them.
Yeah. That's
because
beautiful.
I know how important it is.
Yes, and it's so beautiful that you've now used that as a corrective in your
coaching. Right.
We're going to get there a little later in this call, but I like that you're previewing that. And it feels like, if I'm hearing you correctly, the next sort of inner piece for you is to cultivate even more around the belief in self.
Exactly. Oh, that is exactly it. Because, you know, we can't look outside of ourselves for, you know, validation, support, and everything like that. So yes, it is about, okay, I didn't have those muscles developed you know, the ability to develop those muscles when I was younger. And so now it's something that I have to do for myself. And you know, and those old stories do come back. You know, it's like, well, if you were, you know, so amazing, then why didn't people believe and support you back then? And it's like, yeah, but that's back then. And, you know, being aware of those dynamics and external events that, you know, are just that, external events. And so, yeah, looking to believe in myself is an ongoing thing for sure.
Good, good, good. All right, I'll take one or two more shares here. Gail.
Hi. Well, when I'm in a relationship being coached or trained, I have a tendency to disappear or hide or not finish.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at the things I wrote for my father. You only see the bad things about me. You're controlling me.
Yeah.
You don't have faith in me.
Yeah.
And with my maternal grandmother, it was, I never did it right. It was never good enough.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes she would redo something that I did. So
that makes perfect sense. You know, the disappearing in the coaching container, right? And then not finishing it if you're bringing those relationship projections into that, into the coaching container too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. I'm so glad that you can see that. Good. Who's next? Who is this? 2809 are your last numbers. Who is this? 2809. Are you there? All right. Got the next person. Jessica.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, so I definitely connected with you're going to judge me. And I think in particular, when I was growing up, my father especially was, but I think to some extent my mother also, but my father especially was very uncomfortable with emotion and kids, and also my mom expressing a lot of emotion. So I felt like when I was, you know, feeling very vulnerable or sort of upset about something or had a lot of emotion around it, he would get really mad at me. And the way that I dealt with it at the time was I was, you know, very logical, and I would take out these big yellow legal pads and, like, write my entire argument rationalizing why my feeling was okay on this legal pad and shove it under his door. So I feel like what I've noticed over the years, and I've definitely become aware of it, is that when I have a lot of emotion, I can go in this very cerebral, argumentative place where I'm kind of being this, you know, like hardcore rational courtroom lawyer type person instead of being open.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a great awareness. It's such a great awareness. And I'm sure in some ways it really serves you, and then there are other ways where it's too much, and it's good to, it could be so helpful to back off on that a bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, good.
I mean, I think I've worked a lot on it, but I can still sometimes feel that energy coming out, like, and it really is an energy, you know, like sometimes even though I know that I don't want to be that way, I can just feel it inside, like this.
Yeah, like, oh my gosh, I know I shouldn't be doing this, but I'm doing this. Why am I doing this? Yes. Good. Good. These are all such great examples and illustrations of how family patterns and dynamics can show up in the coaching container. So now that we have this as a basis, here's my next question for everyone to consider, which is when you think about your clients, and if you're not working with a lot of clients, you can think about relationships that you have. How are your clients bringing their dynamics, their family dynamics or early dynamics into the coaching container? If you're thinking about friends, how has a certain friend brought it in? And if this is something that, you know, if what we're looking at today is something that you've already been looking at in client relationships, find the one that you haven't detected yet. Like, oh, you know, that energy is off, or there's that projection. She always, you know, is asking for validation in a way that's really extreme. There must be something going on there, whatever it is for you. So take a look and name at least one or two clients or friends that are bringing a dynamic in, and if you were to take a guess what that dynamic is. So just like clients can bring unchecked dynamics into the coaching container, so can the coach. This is why it's so important for us to have spaces like this to create some awareness, because if we don't check ourselves as coaches, we can bring some of our stuff in as well. So, and none of us are immune to it. So I'll just give you one example from me as a coach. I grew up with a mother that has always been really sick, and the mentality that I grew up with that she just pounded in to me and my sister was that if you really love me, we're going to be in constant contact. If you call me every day, if we talk every day, if we're together all the time, then I know that you love me. But if you don't call me every day, or if we're not in constant contact, then it means that you're a bad daughter, and it means there's something wrong with our relationship. And that, for me, went unchecked for a really long time. Until one day I realized in my coaching that when I didn't hear from a client in between sessions, I would start to panic. And I would reach out to them, even if they didn't need the tighter container in that moment, even if they didn't need accountability in that moment, even if it was like too soon for a check-in, I would feel that if I wasn't in constant contact, that they would think that I wasn't being a good enough coach. Or also, it was kind of my way of controlling things a little bit, right? Like, to stay on top of things. And so that was a really big moment of awareness for me, that I was bringing that into the container as a coach. I'll give you one other example just to kind of open your mind around all of these things. This has to do more with groups, but, you know, my clients, so many of them just stay with me year after year after year, and it's amazing. It's so great. But I realized this came into my consciousness like 5 years ago, that after a client had been with me, any client had been with me for 3 or 4 years. And it came to my awareness around this group of clients. It was like a group of inner circle clients that kept on renewing and renewing. They were in retreats together, and also we were doing privates. After like the third or fourth year of them renewing, I was like, I don't think I should ask them to continue anymore, even though I really wanted to continue with them. And it was clear, well, it wasn't clear to me that they all wanted to continue, but I really wanted to. And when I took a closer look at it, what I realized is that I was scared that they were going to get sick of me if they continued. And that just went back to old childhood relationships of, you know, girls just being mean after, you know, us being friends for a while, and I felt like they would get sick of me, right? I was bringing that straight in, and it almost held me back from making a call to action to that group. So for you as the coach, what are some of your own patterns and dynamics that you've been bringing to the coaching relationship? All right, let's pause here for a moment, and in a little bit we'll get to what to actually do. They would love to hear one or two shares on what you're seeing in terms of your clients or what you've brought as the coach into relationships. Star two. Anyone want to share on this one? Three, two, two, eight. Might be a wrong.
That's me. It's Carolyn.
Hey. Hi, Carolyn.
Hey there. That was interesting, yes. What I bring into the relationship, so it was more when I was doing massage. Even now as doing the coach and massage, part of me goes into second-guessing myself, so I know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And or, especially, if they're more educated than me, specifically if they're an MD or a chiropractor that come in at my table,
yeah,
or having a conversation, I mean, I will start profusely sweating because it's like, oh, my God, can I measure up, I guess is the best word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So it's just so good to be aware that you're bringing that in, right? You can to shift that. Beautiful. Good. Here, one more. Linda.
So for my clients bringing family dynamics, it's about being seen, and too much to handle is a lot of who I attract. and then my patterns, you made the comment about what was holding you back with regards to making an offer. And so I do hesitate a lot of times in those situations because it is sort of, you know, the fear of rejection, if they're not going to appreciate everything I have to offer, you know, then I'm not going to give them the opportunity to reject me.
That works well.
Right, exactly. So that's something that a lot of my clients are from speaking events that I go to, word of mouth, that kind of thing. But I haven't really put together anything that is something that to reach out to a bigger group, and so that's one of the things that I'm hoping to accomplish at the end of our time.
Awesome. That sounds great. I feel like you're ready for that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good. Good. I know there's some other hands up. I'm going to continue, and we'll definitely have time for more shares and Q&A at the end. But I want to get to, okay, so what do you do? Like, now that we have this understanding of how these projections, both from our clients and from ourselves as coaches and practitioners, can come into the container, what do you do? So, first of all, just the awareness alone, just the awareness that we've created today is huge. The more that you know and the more that you are aware, spot for yourself as well as spot for your clients, then even without all of the other pieces I'm going to give today, the what to do and all of that, you're going to start shifting how it shows up in the container. But here's the other important thing about awareness. When you become aware of the projections that your clients are bringing, then you know that it's not about you as the coach. It's not about you. And in fact, one of the things that it's been hard for me to learn over the years, especially just because my own history is that my mother always made it about me. But really, one of the things I've learned over the years that whatever a client brings to me or to the relationship or dynamic with me, rarely, like 99 out of 100 times, actually has nothing to do with me. And I know this is one of those simple things, right? Like, it's so obvious. But the reason why I emphasize this is because when you can really know, you know, when a client is angry, whatever these things, that it's not about you, then you've got your full presence and your full brilliance and your full intuition to know what to do with that. When you get stuck in their projection and the dynamic and you forget that it's not about you, that's when you as the coach are blocked. Because you're triggered. When you're triggered, you don't have your full, all your senses available to you, right? And then it's harder to move things. So what do you do? So number one, reflect the truth. Use your creating awareness skills. So when I spot that a client is bringing a particular projection in, I will lovingly reflect that truth, right? And it might just sound something like this. Sometimes we can bring our family or early life patterns into the coaching relationship. It's totally normal. When we do it, it means that we feel safe enough in the coaching relationship. And, you know, that being said, I'm sensing that sometimes you worry that I'm not approving of you, and that I think you're putting a lot of energy around that fear that I'm not approving of you, which, by the way, is so far from the truth, but I wonder if that resonates for you. And so, you know, you create that awareness, and then the next question I would ask, usually you'll get a yes. Yes, that resonates. And they'll talk more. And then the next question, if they don't already say this, is, so what relationship in your life does this remind you of? And then you can explore from there. Now, sometimes, so that's a very soft way of reflecting the truth. Sometimes with clients, especially ones that I've worked with for a while, and the container is very, very tight, and it's a very safe space, if they bring, you know, a projection, if it's the right moment and the right energy, I might even be a little bit more direct, and I might say something like this: Stacy, I'm not your mother. I'm not going to forget about you because I'm taking a month off. Right? So that's just a more direct way of reflecting the truth, only to be used when you've really explored these pieces with your client and you know your client can take that more direct route. So just by reflecting the truth, creating awareness for your client around what they're bringing in and how that's impacting them and then, you know, their goals, that alone is pure gold and can really begin to shift things. Now, I want to repeat what I said before and take this a little bit more deeply. So what happens in the coaching container is a microcosm of what happens out of the container in the real world. If that statement is true, then what's also true is that if you, the coach, directs things masterfully, then the coaching relationship can become a corrective and deeply healing experience for your clients around their family dynamics and other relationships. I'm going to say that again. I really believe that the coaching container, one of its purposes is to be a corrective and healing experience of these dynamics. What happens in between the goal setting and the strategizing and the, you know, the coaching, in other words, the relationship, can be just as transformative as the coaching itself, and even more, I think. The relationship can be just as, if not more, transformative than the relationship itself. And I'll give you just one example of this. You know, Linda before was talking about validation. And what I've really seen in so many of my clients is, you know, and similar to me, you know, like they come in constantly, you know, looking. They never got outside validation, right? So they don't know how to self-validate. As we've been working towards their business goals, I've been aware that they've brought that projection in, and so through the relationship, I've been providing validation, but not so much validation that I'm just blowing sunshine up their ass, and it's mean, you know, they're just like, either it's meaningless or they come to rely on it, but a balanced amount so that they can begin to self-validate and build that muscle for themselves. And honestly, in my book, that is even more important than any business goal that we achieve together. So this idea of the coaching relationship being powerful and healing and corrective brings us to the next thing that you can do as a coach, which is to bring healing, healthy and healing dynamics and patterns into the container, to very consciously not only think about the content that you're bringing, but to very consciously and intentionally bring the healing, the dynamics that are going to heal the projections. So that's why one of my primary goals as a coach is that I strive to show up as ideal mother, as ideal father, as ideal sister, as best as I can. The sister work is especially important if you're doing group work and retreats and ceremonies and, you know, anything with groups. That just activates all of the sister wounds. We look at this really deeply in the facilitation in my facilitation training, how to really work on those sister pieces. So in my one-on-one or in all of my coaching, you know, as ideal mother, I'm showing up as nurturing, all accepting, loving, validating, consistently there. And all of this creates a healing and a corrective experience for my clients. As ideal father, I allow for mistakes. I don't expect my clients to be perfect. I motivate in positive ways. I hold a lot of structure and a lot of boundaries, but in warm ways. I see the highest potential of my coaches, and I let them know that I see that. I get lovingly confrontational when necessary, and all of that creates a healing and corrective experience. Now, in terms of ideal sister, I'll share with you that in my first few years of coaching, I was always too nervous to show up as sister in the coaching relationship because I had a limiting belief that if I showed up, you know, ideal mother, father, you know, authoritative, but show up as sister, that gives you less, you know, credit, you know, less, you know, like you just have less credit, right? I was able to move past that limiting belief. And so now I also show up as ideal sister. I don't put myself on a pedestal. I hold an energy of there's enough success for everybody to go around. I check my own competition if it comes up. I create an environment of full acceptance. I show that I enjoy my clients' company, that I really enjoy being with them. I'm not just with them because they're clients, but because it makes me happy to be with them. And all of this creates a healing and corrective experience. Now, I mentioned this a little bit before. At this point in the coaching and transformational industry, we also need to think about the ideal leader archetype because too many people have been burnt by coaches and transformational practitioners. There's a lot, there's a lot of stuff that goes on there. And I'll tell you just a quick story about this. So I usually tell it in regards to facilitator training, but it applies here too. So a couple of years ago, I led an ancestor ceremony. It was around the time of Halloween, and we called in the ancestors, and it was a beautiful, beautiful evening, and people had opportunity to connect with loved ones that had died. I happened to be very tired that night. I had just led a 3 or 4 day retreat, and then this was the second 4 day retreat that was like back to back, and I was just tired already. It was like day 6 of leading retreat. And we did the ceremony, and then I went home, and I'm in bed that night, and I realize, oh my gosh, I didn't ask the ancestors to leave. Usually you call the ancestors in, and then you also let them know that they can go. And I realized, ooh, I was so tired, I forgot to do that. I show up the next day at the retreat, and we're having a check-in. Check-in is when each woman just goes around, and they have a few minutes to just share where they're at, what's going on for them. And what happened was the first woman shared, and she was like, I had the worst night ever. I felt like my grandma Sally was in the room with me all night. You know, and then the next one, like, I had panic attacks all night, you know. And 3 or 4 women in, I'm sitting there thinking, oh no, like, I forgot to tell the ancestors to leave. And you know, like, this is what happened. And so I had a real choice. Like, after everybody, I could have just moved on from there and everybody had a weird night and said, well, that's normal to happen after the ancestor ceremony. You know, like, I could have, I was in a position of power there. I could have made up anything, right? But instead, after everybody went, what I said was, I need to apologize to all of you. It's, and my heart was beating so fast. It was a room of 24 people. It was a facilitator training, and I had messed up, right, in that facilitation piece. And I said, like, I have to share with you, I think I know why you've had such horrible nights. And I shared what happened, why. Well, what happened after that was so profound. Woman after woman, they were, so many of them were weeping, and they weren't weeping out of upset or anger. What they shared was that in my being willing to say that I made a mistake and to apologize sincerely for it, it was such a different model of leadership than what they had experienced in the past, whether it was parental leadership or leadership of organizations or coaches or whatever it was. Just that act alone was healing, and it validated, you know, them. So don't underestimate the power of bringing ideal mother, ideal father, ideal sister, ideal leader in. All right, some other pieces that I want to make sure I bring in here. So all of, you know, everything that we've been looking at, again, just the awareness of each of these pieces, things will automatically shift. But here are some more just kind of specific things to think about, especially on how to show up as ideal mother, ideal father, ideal sister, ideal leader. First of all, that equal playing field that we looked at in Energetics 1, so important. Number two, take your ego out of the container. And what I mean by that is remain unattached to what happens. It's not a, it's also not about you. Number three, love, 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 love your client and yourself always, all through any of it. Love. The more that you can just bringing the energy of love in is a corrective and healing dynamic, you know, in and of itself. Be really grounded before you go into your client sessions. The more grounded you are, the more you do your inner work, the easier it's going to be to spot this stuff and to work with this stuff. Be willing to be bold with your client. The creating awareness around these projections can feel a little scary sometimes. Practice the creating awareness skills. Be willing to be bold. All right. I'm going to pause there. I have a feeling there's a bit of homework I want you to do this week. But before we get there, I wanted to leave a bit of time for shares and for questions. So I'd love to hear, what are you seeing for yourself? What do you want to share? What's important? And what questions do you have for me? Star two. All right. Sophie.
Oh, hi, Joanna. I have a question, and you know how there's there's this kind of current trend of where, like, it seems like in coaching right now, like, you know how you made the consulting and coaching distinction? I feel like there's a lot of pressure to get people really big and instant results, and that, you know, the kind of process and, you know, going deep is not valued. I don't know if that's my own projection, but, yeah, and I think that, you know, seeing a lot of that marketing, it really does bring, like, activate that fear of, oh, okay, well, I must be a pretty not good coach if I can't get someone to somewhere in a certain space of time. And I was wondering, what is a good question to deal with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's true. Like, there is a lot of that in the industry. And it's also true that there are some things that can yield quick results, and then other things take time. So for me, you know, and each of us were, you know, like every practitioner and every business is, you know, does things their own way, how they're going to do it. But I'll just say, like, for me, I haven't been willing to give in to those messages in the industry. A big reason is because I see how burnt people have become by them, and how there's a lot of self, you know, shaming and blaming and frustration and, you know, all of that. And so for me, I just don't give into it. You know, when I talk to a client, when I market, whatever it is, I'll say, you know, if you're looking for the kind of coach that's going to promise you to get you to the moon and back in a day, I'm not that coach. This isn't going to work. I really believe in sustainability. I believe that some things can happen quickly, but other things take time and persistence. I believe that when you take the time with some things, they last, as opposed to just a quick fix that's fly by night. And, you know, and I really just stand strong in that. And what are the results? The results are that a lot of people don't want to work with me. Because they've bought in to the industry madness. But the results are also that a lot of people do work with me because they hear what I'm saying and it resonates for them and it feels like truth to them and they trust me more because what I'm saying actually makes sense to them. So I know that's not you asked for a question. That's not really a question.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah. So what are you hearing in all that that feels important to you? Like, what are you really getting from what I'm sharing?
Actually, I really like that because if you advertise, or not you, like anyone advertises as instant results, that's what your clients will expect. And they will be horribly disappointed when, or in themselves or me or both, if you kind of make that kind of expectation in advance. So I think that I'm noticing that in, like, marketing and talking to clients, I think it's important to show them the possibility, but also set reasonable and grounded expectations for growth because so that they start off on the right foot. That's what I'm seeing. And I really like the way you phrased it because it's encouraging, yet it doesn't promise something that, you know, is very unlikely, you know, and doesn't last. So that was a really great answer.
Awesome. I'm glad. And that also relates back, you know, we looked at this a little bit in strategizing. You want to, envisioning, like, you want to push your clients 100% beyond their comfort zone, but you also want to set them up for, you know, set them up for success by not having something unrealistic. Good. Who else? What are you seeing from this discussion around projections? What questions do you have for me about how to kind of leverage this information more in your sessions? What have you got? Linda.
So I missed the first 10 minutes of the call, so I don't know if this was covered or not. But do you create some sort of questionnaire and present this to them initially or at a particular point in the coaching relationship where you know there's some stuff you could get to deeper and you think it might be around this, and so you give them these the opportunity to kind of reflect on these types of fears and projections in the family dynamic? Or are you just saying, well, I'm kind of guessing it might be around, you know, they want, you know, have issues with anger or, you know,
yep.
feeling that
yep.
they're being controlled. Where, how do you approach that?
Yeah, so I love the idea of adding a question or two about it into the intro questionnaire. I don't
mm-hmm.
have that, but I think it's a great idea. I will oftentimes in groups, I will, you know, more intentionally, you know, there's a structured time for it.
Right.
We'll do some work around it as a group. With one-on-one, I usually just kind of wait and see what comes up. Well, you know, it's
okay.
like I was saying earlier, it's a combo of waiting and seeing plus preemptively bringing in the corrective energies, you know, just to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll usually just, you know, as I notice, usually the first time it comes up, I may or may not say something, but as soon as it comes up a second time, then I'll say, okay, it's a pattern, and I'll bring it up, and we'll take a
okay.
look at it. But I think it's a great
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, I mean, because, well, and initially as in an intake questionnaire kind of thing, it might be a little overwhelming for somebody. It's like, well, what the hell is she asking me these questions for?
Right, that's,
right?
I mean, that's what I was going to say. Like, it might be a little overwhelming. I mean, I think for some people, you can tell from the enrollment conversation if someone is ready for it or not. You know, so
right.
I mean, for some people it would be great, but for other people it would either be overwhelming or they would think that they'd have no idea what you were talking about. They'd be like,
right.
what?
Right,
no,
right.
you're my coach. Like, I don't know what you mean.
Right? You're supposed to tell me. Come on.
Right.
<Yeah.
laughs> So it might be a person-by-person basis if you're going to flip it
okay.
in to the intake.
All right.
Yeah, it's a great
Thank
question.
You.
It's a great idea.
Thanks.
Good. Who else? Anyone else? Star two. Any other questions you have or anything else you want to share? Okay, let's see. Who is this? I think this is Carolyn.
Carolyn.
Yeah.
That's Carolyn. So I have a quick question. You mentioned something about competition. So what if a client brings in that competition side of themselves? They compare themselves to you as you're having, you know, the conversation and going deeper. How do you bring that around?
Yeah,
it's
that's one of the toughies. I'm really glad you're
yeah.
bringing it forward. So
okay.
it's the same thing as for all of them. It's about reflecting
okay.
the truth in a really loving and kind way and normalizing right away as you reflect it. So it might sound something like this. You know, Carolyn, I might be getting this wrong, but, you know, as we're talking, I get this feeling that you're comparing yourself. I might not use the word competitive, side note, just because
right,
it's
right,
competitive
yeah. comparing,
for people,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I feel like you might be comparing yourself with me, which, of course, is so normal, you know, in the coaching relationship and, you know, and there's nothing wrong with it. But the reason I'm bringing it up is because I almost feel like it's holding you back in some way. And I just want to check in and ask, does that resonate for you? Do you feel like any of that is coming up for you?
Mm-hmm.
And then from there you can explore into, you know, where it comes from and, you know, whatever it is. I just gave a very, like, blanket one. You can use
specific yeah, yeah.
details, you know, as you reflect the truth.
Mm-hmm.
For them. But is that helpful? Does that answer your question?
Yes, it's very helpful. Yes. No,
great.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Jessica.
Hi. Well, I have two questions. One is, what if a client So, you know, normally as a coach, it's not about my opinion. But sometimes I've had clients say, well, you know, but what do you think? Like, mm-hmm. you know, I really want your opinion. And I'm curious, using ideal mother, father, sister, leader, whatever, how you deal with that.
Yeah. So I will always give my opinion if someone asks, but a lot of times when they ask, so if it's just the first time or, you know, whatever, I might just say, I'm happy to give you my opinion in a moment, but I'm curious, why are you asking for my opinion? What will that do for you? And then that can sometimes just open up their being able to see that they're looking for something instead of trusting their own instinct. Or it might come through that they actually need some facting, or that they you know, they need that piece from me because they don't have all the pieces of the information and I might have it, or that they feel like they're just not seeing things clearly. It will open up to a bigger conversation. If I have every now and again, I'll have clients that you know, do it a lot, and then that's when I'll have them look at some of the bigger patterns there for them. I'm always happy to give, and I'll tell them, like, I'm always happy to give my opinion. And, you know, for some of my clients, that's part of why they've hired me, is for my opinion, because I do a lot of consulting with coaching. I'll always say, like, I'm always happy to give my opinion, but I know that you know this. You actually have the wisdom inside of you, and part of my intention for you isn't just to get you to X goal, but for you to start trusting yourself more. So I promise I'll give you my opinion at the end of this conversation, but are you willing to explore a little bit more for yourself? And then I'll go into asking them about, you know, what their inner wisdom is showing them, for them to kind of rely more on themselves and their own opinion. That makes sense?
That makes a lot of sense. That's great, because I think what I did is my inclination was that, I mean, partly it wasn't even a factual thing. It was more like, I think I had a client who was starting to explore spirituality and wanted to go back to church. And she was kind of like, well, what do you think? You know, do you even believe in, you know, I don't know. And I was sort of feeling like, really, it shouldn't matter what I think. But I felt like if I just said, I think I just said something like, oh, you know, well, what's important to you about my feeling, or it felt a little like I'm not going to tell you or something, and it felt weird.
So yeah.
I like what you said, because it leaves that open. Yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
That's helpful.
You know, and in that particular situation, just as you were talking, the question that came to me was, why don't you trust yourself in this matter? So, and again, I would preempt it with, I'll give you my opinion, but I'm just curious, why don't you trust yourself in this matter?
Yeah.
So it's not an accusatory, why don't you trust yourself, but sort of a little bit of a lighthearted, because my guess is that there's something, which is related to spirituality, right, is like there's trust if you're going to go back
right.
and believe in God.
Right.
So there, you know, there's some connections there.
Right. I know. And it was kind of funny because I was like, yes, I'm totally with you on that. But I didn't want to, I felt like that was, anyway, you nailed it, I think. Well, the other question, is it okay if I ask one little additional?
Yeah.
So I think it relates to what you just said, because I feel like, you know, with the ideal mother, well, with any of these, and also just with the wording that you just said, I feel like I always wonder how to get the tone right.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like in my heart, I know that I have faith in my client and love my client and I'm excited about it. But sometimes I have a fear that I'm not projecting it correctly in my tone. And I'm not exactly sure where that fear comes from. Like, when I've actually gotten feedback, clients have never said to me, oh, you sounded cold-hearted. They usually say, you sounded really nurturing.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm curious if you have any advice on just sort of
the energy and the tone and the sound of it?
Yeah, it's such a great question. It's actually a piece of what we were looking at the retreat, at the Shadow and Archetype retreat last week. So one thing that you can do that can help you find the tone is to, outside of session, to practice moving into the energy of it. So you can almost like put on some light, like let's say you're working on Mother, just in the background put on some light music that reminds you of Ideal Mother, not too loud. Take a moment, close your eyes, bring yourself into the energy of Mother, and then you can either talk to yourself from the point of view of the Ideal Mother or talk to your clients or your kids. You know, not obviously your clients or kids aren't going to be there, but you can just imagine. And you'll find a tone inside of you that feels really right and it'll allow you to practice it.
That's really interesting. Is that something that you do?
Yes. I, as I was saying it, I was like, oh, without, sharing this outside of the retreat might sound really weird. That's why I encourage everyone at some point to come to the Shadow Archetype Retreat. But this is this is a daily practice of mine with lots of different archetypes and energies that I'm wanting to bring into my life.
If that feels weird,
you can just write a letter from the point of view of the Ideal Mother, and you'll hear it in your head.
It does not sound weird at all. It sounds completely fascinating to me. It's just, I think it's really eye-opening to think of that being a regular practice. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let me take it on. I'd love to hear what comes through. All right.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Okay, so a couple of things before we wrap for today. There's going to be a worksheet with some questions. You'll see it's all in the worksheet. There's going to be some questions for you to go deeper with all of this. I want you to also track yourself this week in your coaching relationships, in your non-coaching relationships, and see where you're projecting. Like even with me, you know, how do you bring yourself if you're asking a question or a share, just to get more awareness, right? So just really track yourself this week in terms of projections. If you've got a partner, coach, how is it showing up there? I also want you to practice bringing mother, father, ideal mother, father, and sister into all of your relationships, not just your coaching relationships, but like, how would it feel to bring, I don't know, I'm just going to make this up, if you're married, to bring some ideal sister into your marriage? How would it feel to bring a little bit more ideal father into a relationship with a friend? Right, as appropriate, of course, but just play with those over the next week or two. And then in your partner calls, you can either, you know, just talk about this topic, get coached on it, and if you, or not, but at the very least, if you feel that you've been bringing projections, dynamics, patterns into that container, that would be a great thing to talk about with your partner and unpack that a bit more. All right. Thank you, everyone, for your presence today and all that you brought. I hope this will be a topic that will continue to work on you over the next few weeks and work through you over the next few weeks. Keep me posted. Share your takeaways in the Facebook group. Some of them might be now, but there'll be more that come over the next few days. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.